Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Woods, Nermeen Sheikh, Martina Sena, Tammy Warrenoff, Camille Baker, Sharina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Kaiman, Juan Carlos Davila. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Then one day I turned on the dial.
Way, hey, 90.1.
There I found music to make me smile.
Way, hey, 90.1.
I waited for a legal ID.
Way, hey, 90.1.
The DJ said WUSB.
Way, hey, 90.1.
They start each day with the rising sun.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Don't ever finish till after day is done.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you want good music to hear,
way, hey, 90.1.
There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you like the sounds, do take a look.
Way, hey, 90.1.
At WUSB Stony Brook.
Hey, hey, hey.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. You're tuned to either 90.1 FM or 107.3 in a small geographical area or somewhere in the world at WUSB.FM. Either way, you're stuck with us for another hour. It's Off the Wall. good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
There, as you know, using the words in all the many ways I can.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much every possible meaning. And let's stop people right now from complaining. I mean, complain for the usual reasons, but if you think we sound a bit, what's the word for it? Digital or
jittery?
Jittery. Well, not. I mean, I just had three cups of coffee, so I'm going to be a little jittery. But
if there is jitter in our broadcast,
how would you describe that, though? If somebody doesn't know what you're talking about. It kind of sound robotic, I guess, or maybe, yeah, you know, just different. Not the way you would want to sound. Well, that applies every day. Okay, look, if you think there's something wrong with the broadcast other than us, we know about it. It's a bandwidth issue.
Let's say like a rough stream. You know, if you're streaming something, isn't a pleasant stream. This is a rough stream.
All right, just to give people a sense, our internet provider usually gives us a whopping 35 megabits per second upstream.
You're doing this, aren't you?
Yeah, I have to. I have to explain it to people. Because, you know, they deserve to know what we're dealing with here in the United States. Because other countries, oh, my God, I get, a gazillion terabyte uplink. How can you live? Yeah, 35 megabits. That's it. 35 megabits a second. That's our uplink. But it's not our uplink right now, because right now our uplink is 0.3. What is that, a 100th of what it's supposed to be? Yeah, because 3.5 would be a tenth. So 0.3... would be a 100th for no reason that I understand or that they can explain. Our uplink bandwidth has been decimated, and they have to actually send technicians to figure it out. That's where we are right now. Until fiber comes to the area, which I'm hoping it'll happen sometime when we get a gig up, supposedly. I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, I mean, that's our threat to the rest of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
This may be, you know, what you think we sound like, but at any moment, we could be thrust full force, synchronous, incredible bandwidth, yeah. But we don't have that right now.
Dream on. I don't think that's going to happen.
We're being sold something that is not what it is billed as, and yeah. It's not good as is. We're just experiencing an incredible amount of disruption. Disability.
It's strike three, because, you know, we're remote.
It's like being silenced.
We're remote due to COVID. You know, we're still taking precautions and broadcasting from our satellite facility. So there's that. The radio station itself is operating at a fraction of its power because our transmitter blew up. It really did. It blew up. It was spectacular.
I didn't even think about that. Your list here is that puts it in perspective.
Uh-huh. You helped put the new transmitter in, the one that we're using right now. We're operating on fumes. I don't even understand it. Frank, our engineer, tried to explain it to me several times.
We didn't really talk about this.
But the transmitter wasn't really operating, but yet somehow we were still able to get a signal out. And all praise to him for making that happen for the weeks that we needed to have something. And then we got the temporary transmitter that's going to be used for our other frequency at some point, that I think we're about a quarter of our power right now. And we're trying to get the actual transmitter. And of course, now we're running into supply side problems, getting it in a timely fashion. So it's still going to be a while. That's strike two. And of course, our bandwidth issues today, that's strike three. So I guess we're out. I guess we're done. we know how to not get the signal to you in so many ways. But of course, on the internet, doesn't matter, does it? If you're listening on the internet, you couldn't even tell. You couldn't tell. But then we could just be broadcasting without any equipment whatsoever and pretending we're a radio station. But really, we're a radio station. We really are.
The point being, this isn't who we are normally.
Well, it is right now.
This isn't normal. We're running at really a fraction of our capacity, but we're enduring and we're bringing you all the latest.
Everyone is working just as hard as if we were broadcasting at full power. And it's an incredible place. You know, hundreds of people volunteer their time and put together shows. And It's, you know, when the technology fails, it's a shame, but we don't get discouraged. And of course, your support always makes a huge difference. So whenever you can, go to WUSB.FM, pledge your support there, and keep this unique radio station going. There really aren't very many like it. They used to be more. They used to be more. Now they're turning into NPR stations. Or yeah, I was listening. We do a lot of radio listening to strange frequencies. You heard Cuba on the AM dial a few weeks ago. I was listening to FM. And just to give you a sense, for some reason, I tuned to 106.5. I don't know why, but I heard something that was kind of compelling, but it was very, very distant, and it was hard to hear, and it kept getting stepped on by an NPR station. And then there was another station, a commercial station, that was stepping on that, all at the same frequency. Well, I figured out what the commercial station was. I was somewhere in eastern Connecticut. Then I figured that there was a translator station. That's what they call the stations that rebroadcast the full frequency. Like, for instance, 107.3 is our translator that broadcasts to the Stony Brook area. Of course, the people from Connecticut are stepping on that signal. We'll get to that some other time. They had a translator in somewhere up in Connecticut. Actually, no, I'm sorry. They had a translator in Ridge out east on Long Island for this NPR station from Connecticut. It turned out that the station I was listening to was another translator from that same NPR station, and that one was in Connecticut. So they have two stations on the same frequency interfering with each other, the same station. that tells you how massive NPR has become, where they can do something like that. And here we are just trying to, you know, get by on 90.1 and 107.3 and getting to all of our listeners who value live people in the studio or in the satellite facilities.
Absolutely. It's sort of an inelegant use of their resources, and really compared to what we've kept together here as a station for so many years, 45 years, it pales in comparison, and we don't compare ourselves very often. And in fact, yeah, when it's that, as I said, inelegant or just, showy, it's mm-hmm. like, gosh, that's so, wide ranging. You're just adding all kinds of stuff like that. And, you know, it really takes a lot at community organized stations and the broadcast sector to keep all of the things working just right all the time. So we adapt, and we really, really appreciate everybody out there listening.
Yeah, and you know, I listen to Weird Frequencies because I'm always looking for something. You know, another station out there. I thought I had found it. I thought I actually found a station that was an alternative station for some reason at that frequency. Turned out it was an NPR program. Still a good program, but it wasn't local. It was a national program. And it was just kind of weird how eventually I figured it out. I didn't know that one station had different streams for its broadcast on different frequencies. And there were so many of them. It boggles the mind.
It's sort of like they're making themselves seem bigger and more varied.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're just really kind of cramming it into every corner of resources they, you know, have legally. And though that's great, may look like they're thriving on all these multiple streams, but I don't know. I think there's worthy critiques as well.
No, every time they do that, there's a station that doesn't go on the air because of that. And that's, you know, it's limited.
The largesse of being able to afford, and maintain a license that's really just an adjunct to your primary stuff. It's kind of ridiculous.
I heard a rumor, actually I heard it from Frank, our chief engineer, that they might be expanding the FM dial from 88 all the way down to 82. Wouldn't that be nice? If they put non-commercial stations there that weren't NPR, that weren't religion, you know, that weren't part of some massive corporate entity that exists and claims to be non-commercial. That would be nice.
Yeah, it may spark more interest, mm-hmm. and more programming options to boot.
And don't listen to people who say radio is dead, because, you know, if radio was dead, we should be able to take over those commercial stations that exist everywhere. But no, they're out there, they're prospering. And they're not really doing much creative programming. So radio is very much alive. It's different. It's changing. It's fluid. That's just the way things are. Okay, enough about us. But there's one other thing. A few people have asked, what has happened to our sustaining feature films of the year that was? This is where we went back to the very beginning of the Academy Awards back in 1929. We reviewed every single film that won Best Picture, including the foreign films that won Best Picture. We even went back into the 1800s and looked at some important films that came out in those years. And we made it all the way up to a couple of years ago, I think 2019, 2020. And that's when our transmitter blew up. And as is stated in our contract with the sustaining feature people, we cannot do the sustaining feature if the station is anything less than full power. So when the station comes back to full power, that is when we will finish the feature films of the year that was. I don't make the rules. That's just how it is. So we have to wait. It's fine with me. I don't have time.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that answers a lot of the questions people had about that.
I hope so. I really do.
Yep.
So we went to one of the rallies this weekend, the anti-gun rallies, I guess. Yeah, you know, it's not completely anti-gun. It's anti-stupid gun. It's anti-irresponsibility. It's anti-fear. You know, when you say anti-gun, I mean, you know, yeah, there's a good degree of that, but obviously they're used in some purposes. And it's not really fair to paint people with a broad brush. But yeah, in this particular context, I think the way guns have been used recently in this country, you could say it's anti-gun because guns have gotten out of control. We went to the one at Resistance Plaza, is that what it's called, in Port Jefferson Station? And there were a couple hundred people there. But, you know, a little bit smaller than the one a few years ago after the shooting at the Florida High School. But what was different this time, to me at least, was the support of the cars passing by. I would say literally every other car was honking in support. And that was amazing. It just put tears in my eyes to see that kind of... Because not everybody could make the rally, obviously, but they all supported it. Yeah, before we got there, we saw a couple of pickup trucks that were like revving their engines and trying to intimidate people. Why? Guys, you know, do you really think that is an effective argument? Do you think that's going to win anybody over to your side? This makes you look like idiots. This makes you look like the problem. And, you know, if you think about it just a little bit, you'll realize you're smarter than that. And maybe listen to what people are saying and understand that we can live together and figure this all out and not step on anybody's rights. But when we got there, I don't think we saw a single anti-rally person shouting from their car, revving their engines. Last time, there was another rally across the street. There wasn't this time. So it seems pretty universal, almost universal, I would say, that people believe we need to do something. And I'm hearing that the Senate did something. Okay, you know, what they did was a step. And everyone is really, really happy that they took a step. But in my mind, nothing really essential was covered. You know, the assault-style weapons are still being handed out to 18-year-olds. Yeah, okay, maybe they're going to check a little closer now. Okay, but they shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't have them at all. It's, you know, it's just insane that the gun lobby is so fierce, so strong, that they can't even do that. They can't even stop selling these weapons that have no business in the hands of civilians. They're weapons of war. There's simply no questioning that. That is what they are for. Yeah, you'll hear senators in the South saying they use them to shoot prairie dogs and wild pigs. I don't know what they're smoking. I don't know what kinds of wild pigs and prairie dogs they have. You don't need assault-style weapons for that. Yeah, you know, you'll feel powerful. It's fun to shoot them. Sure, I'm not going to question that. Doesn't mean you have to have one in your house. Doesn't mean you have to have one for every member of your family. You know, go to a range and, play with them there. But they're dangerous. They're deadly. And this has been proven over and over and over again. What is the argument here? You know, of all people, Monica Lewinsky tweeted something the other day. That really struck me. I didn't realize this. Did you know I might have the year wrong here, but the Second Amendment was written in 1789, I believe. Bullets were invented in 1847. In other words, when the Second Amendment was written, there was no such thing as a bullet. Yeah. So when they're referring to the right to bear arms in a well-regulated militia, which, you know, that's a whole other thing, they had no conception of the kinds of weapons. I mean, certainly not military-style weapons, assault-style weapons that we're talking about right now, but even, you know, things like pistols, you know, and just rifles and things like that. You know, they had bayonets, and they fired something, right, Kyle?
Yeah, I believe the term is a musket shot.
Musket shot.
It's a shot.
Yeah, and you know, really, right now, our nation must get shot. That's kind of how it's been translated today. But musket shot. So from a musket, something comes out. But what is that?
It's a very primitive projectile. It's just a ball of lead. It's nasty. I remember going to one of these Colonial Williamsburg, and I think they had shot there, and it now strikes me as very odd to be handing out balls of lead to children.
Well, you know,
I don't know how I got that, but
handing out balls of lead to children is actually a lot safer than what they're handing out to children today.
Well, that's I didn't think about it that way. They do not. No, they don't deserve this. And you're right. The technology just was not to the level it is. We've talked about the technological aspects as well as the technology with social and behavioral aspects. But the ability to make parts and do these things now that are just beyond even the computer-aided design aspects, the cartridge, and all of this accessorizing and fetishizing, it's gone too far. And that's, I think, what people are saying about it, and that we need to consider where we're at versus the kind of rationales we're dredging up of mm-hmm. yesteryear. Do they really meet the moment? And I think consensus is saying, no, we got to take a look at some of this.
Yeah. I mean, every argument that is used to have modern day weapons in the hands of regular civilians, it falls flat when you counter it with facts, you know, like having guns to protect yourself. Well, you know, those cops in Texas had a lot of guns, couldn't do anything to save those kids 2 weeks ago. You know, was it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? It's, you know,
3 weeks in Uvalde.
It's pathetic.
They're just completing the funerals now.
And so many people who are armed aren't able to protect themselves when someone else attacks them, because the person who attacks them has the element of surprise. I think it's a super small percentage of good guys with guns who stop bad guys with guns. That's just a fact. You know, every single news story about that you read where a good guy with a gun wins, you're seeing the same stories over and over again because there are so few of them. Whereas every day there are stories of the bad guys with guns and the stupid guys with guns causing all kinds of mayhem and death. That doesn't have to happen. I want to read something from The Patch, which is a I don't know what it is, to be honest. It's a website that basically encompasses communities. And this is from the Port Jefferson Patch, but it's not about the Port Jefferson rally. It's about the rally that took place in Southampton. But surprisingly in-depth. And it's a good story. But there's a dark side as well, which I'll get to. Their voices breaking, three Southampton high school students spoke about what it has been like to grow up in a time when active shooter drills are the norm. And teenagers worry about whether they will be gunned down during a day of classes. The students were among East End residents who joined others around the nation in a March for Our Lives rally in Southampton on Saturday. Last month's shooting in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 students and two teachers were killed, has sparked outrage, carrying signs that read, "Ban assault weapons, protect our kids, not guns, buy weapons, not children." Bury weapons, not children. Human lives over gun greed. No guns, no graves. I can't believe we still have to protest this word I can't say. A group of residents gathered outside Southampton Town Hall to plead for concrete change. Scout Whiting, 16 years old, spoke about her experience. If it is not if, It's when a shooter, she said. Her mother, a television producer, called her when the news of Uvalde broke. She said, she whispered, if a shooter ever comes into your school, you are to throw a desk through the window and run with the wind. Get the hell out of there. Scout was six when a shooter walked into Sandy Hook Elementary School and fatally shot 26 people, including 20 small children. 10 years and nothing has changed, she said. It's not if, it's when. When are we actually going to do something about this? J.C. Newcomb, youth president of the East End chapter of the NAACP, also reflected on Sandy Hook. I stepped into my house admiring all the beautiful Christmas decorations and all the gifts that could possibly be wrapped under the tree. Suddenly, I felt a tight squeeze around me and saw my mom in tears. That's when I knew something very bad had happened. She sat me in front of the tree and explained that a shooter had walked into an elementary school and gunned down young children and teachers. It was very traumatizing, she said. All I could think about was all the unopened presents sitting under those families' trees. She added, I was in second grade, and all I could think of was, what if something like that happened in my school? And I have to say, you know, every school kid in this damn country has to be asking questions like that, and they should not be doing that. Continuing, Newcomb also said she has been practicing lockdown and active shooter drills for as long as she can remember. It's not normal. They should not be doing that. I remember being in kindergarten, and my fellow classmates and I were trying to squeeze behind our teacher's small desk because we had to be out of sight, she said. In the years since, Newcomb said, whenever she hears about another shooting, we all ask ourselves, how many more innocent children who've barely been able to experience life will die next? Why is it that government and politicians who have the authority to do so, to make change in this country, aren't trying to stop these senseless shootings? They sit in D.C. collecting paychecks while hiding behind God and guns. But someone that believes in God wouldn't allow children and babies to be slaughtered day in and day out in this country. And if I could just step out of the story for a second, you know, this is all so that somebody can enjoy a hobby. That's what it is. It's not about self-defense, okay? Because, you know, AR-16, do I have it right? AR-15?
15, I believe.
I can't keep track of them.
M4.
Sorry. I don't know what that
M16.
Is. M16. I know what an M80 is.
Those are military.
But what's the damn
Which
gun?
Version?
What's,
well,
what's
do you
the
want?
Gun they keep
you
using?
You want guns? We got guns.
What's the gun they keep using?
AR-15.
AR-15. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm not an expert on guns. I don't think I have to be to know, you know, what is safe and what is not safe. AR-15s should not be in the hands of people. No, they're not meant for civilians. They're weapons of war. And if we're in a war, okay, but we're not in a war. And, you know, if we ever were going to be in a war, it would have been over the last few years. And if we can get through that without, you know, Civil War Part Two, I think we will be able to, you know, get through our differences in a different way. So, okay, right away, all these people are dying because somebody wants to have an AR-15. And someone believes that that's what the writers of the Constitution intended. And, you know, seeing this deal that was basically agreed to by members of the Senate, seeing people on both sides saying, yeah, this doesn't infringe on anyone's Second Amendment rights. They're missing the point because the Second Amendment doesn't guarantee this kind of thing. And this is what we've been seeing over the past couple of decades. People saying that the Second Amendment somehow has anything to do with assault-style weapons in the hands of civilians. It does not. Let's stop kidding ourselves and saying that it does. No, it doesn't. We went over this a couple of weeks ago as far as, you know, how to interpret the Second Amendment in the language that it was written in at the time. In other words, looking at the rest of the Constitution. And it certainly does not mean anything like what it has been twisted into meaning today. And, you know, further proof of that, if you just have to go back 50 years when nobody was interpreting it that way. This is a fairly new phenomena, right? In 1975, this was not an issue. It was only after Reagan that things started to change. Anyway, let me get back to the story. It's really pretty well done, I think. She said military-grade weapons designed solely to kill should not be allowed to fall into the hands of the public. Attending school in today's climate, Newcomb said, everyone is always planning for the what if. You know, when you're a teenager, there are enough what ifs. You don't need this. You absolutely do not need this. She added, I find myself in class looking around and thinking of escape routes and wondering if I would be able to jump out the window quick enough if a shooting did happen. A third Southampton High School student, Michelle Moristicia, also gave emotional testimony. When my parents send my sisters and me to school, the last thought in their minds should be, are my kids safe? She too recalled lockdowns when the teacher closed the blinds and she and her classmates would have to huddle in a corner of the classroom furthest from the door. You know, I don't think I knew what a lockdown was until I was in my 20s when I saw my first program about prison.
I have a little bit of a different trajectory with that. Like, it was emerging, but it was indistinct. It was kind of vague. It was just there's a stranger at the school and people would, I guess, close the door and turn off the lights. It was very specious. You didn't really know. And it wasn't as involved and detailed and specific as and rigorous as it is now. So just, I was thinking about that myself. The concept and the training that students have now, apart from academics, involves so much more.
Absolutely.
And it just strikes me as a comment overall, like the fact that this is referring to something that was banned at one point. Now we have a big problem, tends to be associated with these kinds of problems. And for whatever reason, we're confused or obstinate about doing something about it, even those who can do something about it. And it infuriates people and it really messes up students. And that's what we can't fathom because we didn't have that kind of rigor around this topic because it was not the same. And just hearing some of the comments this weekend around this, students are really upset at the greed involved, as you pointed out. Like, that's not only just apart from the fear and craziness about what else they're learning in school just to survive, it's just how much money is and greed is involved in this at the cost of their own lives.
Well, politicians are basically bought and paid for by the NRA, which, you know, led me to ask a question, just trying to think outside the box here. Certainly with 90% of Americans wanting more regulations, more than what the Senate is grudgingly agreeing to, apparently, there's a lot of money there, too. And, I know politicians will say, oh, we're not for sale. We have integrity. But come on, we all know they are. Is it possible for us simply to outspend the NRA and get these politicians to work for us and, you know, double whatever the NRA is giving them? Why not give that a try? Nothing else has worked. If it's about money, well, we've got the money. We really do, because we've got the numbers. We've got the people.
Just a blanket promise to outspend them.
I don't know.
Dollar for dollar.
Come up with an anti-NRA lobbying group. There's got to be a solution here. There's got to be a way to do this. Because, you know, if you're waiting for the Senate to do it, you're going to be waiting an awful long time. It's never going to get done.
Well, work their system. Work the system uh-huh. they're abusing or availing themselves of above anything else.
Yeah. You know, and one thing, you know, that Republicans are good at is working the system. So maybe we should take some notes. And when you have something like this that pretty much crosses the aisle many times over, I think we can get it done. But we have to do it. Let's not rely on those people who have proven themselves not to really care. I mean, seriously, look at the responses that we've seen. You know, we had Ted Cruz saying that this can be solved by simply having one door in a school building. I mean, first, they're not even taking into the fire safety issues there. One door. Okay, so do you know the massive amount of lines that will create coming in and going out? Have you ever heard of a window? You know, people can climb into those as well. There are all sorts of ways that people can access the building. That is not the issue. That's not the issue at all. The issue is the guns. It's getting a hold of these weapons of war and using them against civilian populations. That is the main issue. There are other issues too, sure. Mental health is an issue, one that we've neglected an awful lot, but most mentally ill people are not violent. So, you know, if you simply castigate everybody who is mentally different, you're just going to cause a whole lot more fear and panic in a different group, and you're not going to solve the problem. Another issue is violence in media. Whether it's video games or films, TV shows, and that is a problem that should be addressed. It shouldn't be controlled and censored. It's something that, again, we as people can make a difference. If we shun those particular films and games that glorify violence and weaponry and shooting people's heads off, if we do that, then they'll stop making them. They'll make other things instead. You know, you don't need a blockbuster film to involve gunfights, because life is a lot more interesting than that. You have to do better writing. You have to have interesting, problems to solve and all sorts of adventures to go on. But gunplay is not necessary. Yeah, it seems like it's something that we expect, but it's only because nobody has the courage to break out of the cycle. And of course, there are many, many programs. I'm thinking of The Wire, for instance, one of the greatest programs ever made. And yeah, there are guns in that. That is like a documentary. That's like, you know, reflecting reality. It's never glorified. You know, it's never, you don't see the gratuitous, you know, blood shots when somebody is shot with a weapon, because it's not about that. It's about the human aspect. It's about the tragedy. It's about the reaction to this sort of a thing. But not every TV program needs to have that. It doesn't further the plot. Okay, let me get... You can see the story is very long. I'm going to skip past a bit of it. Speaking at the Southampton rally, where New York State Assemblyman Fred Thiel, Suffolk County Legislator Bridget Fleming, and Southampton Town Supervisor Jay Schneiderman, as well as teachers, students, and faith leaders in the community. And afterwards, the group marched to Southampton High School. Southampton Town Democratic Committee Chair Hare, wrote in an email about the event, remember that in 2018, March for Our Lives organized the largest single day of protest against gun violence in history. Millions came together to protest our political leaders in action. They spurred an historic youth turnout in the 2018 midterm elections, with a 47% increase over the last midterm election and the highest percentage of youth voter turnout ever. Voters made it clear that the status quo was no longer acceptable. A record 46 NRA-backed candidates lost their elections that November. Let's do it again. And let's not think that not enough was accomplished. Yeah, not enough was accomplished, but things were done. There were victories. And you can't give up. You can't say that we have no effect. We do. Yeah, not enough. Okay, not enough was done, but something was done.
Yeah, I just don't want people to blame themselves too much, because there's also been a huge effort to deride the achievements and at least the problem solving that has been attempted. You know, we talk about how much doesn't get done, and it's not for not trying, at least as far as the government goes, these last couple terms.
Yeah, and this is it's a really good story. Written by Lisa Finn, I believe, on the patch, patch.com, I guess, or Porch Everson patch or something like that. But yeah,
hey, come on, media is media. They have some kind of slice of the market here.
It's a website, and it seems to exist everywhere. But for some reason, it also I mentioned it has its dark side, and a dark side is basically comprised of the people who comment afterwards. So, you know, after a story like this, where, you know, really to me, the only reaction would be, sympathy, you know, these kids that are scared, that are growing up in a way that, you know, other people didn't have to worry, because we didn't have this kind of sick society that was fascinated with weaponry. So, shall we take a look at some of the comments that...
Oh, you're going there?
I'm going there. You have to. I don't like to read comments, but in a story like this, you know, the people who are in the story, they're going to see these comments. So let's see. RJ Mack from Deer Park, North Babylon said, I support their right to speak out.
Hey, that's not bad.
That's good, right? That's what I expect. Walter Long from Garden City says, too bad about these snowflake future crybaby drug abuse failures. Nevertheless, we are never giving up our AR-15s and all its interchangeable parts. Notice the noncompliance of the New York State SAFE Act, similar to the Liberals' failure to give up their drug abuse regardless of the law.
Okay, there are a lot of assumptions there.
And a lot of issues.
Yeah, I think somebody's projecting.
So, you know, when you say you're never going to give up your AR-15, I maintain you will. I maintain the people are going to make sure you do, because we're fed up and we're sick of this and we're tired of tiptoeing around your feelings. If anyone's a snowflake, it's you. All right. And just because you have a weapon of war does not make you strong. And every day that becomes more and more clear. We are pissed. We are fed up with waiting. We are sick of living in a society of fear that you are building with all this weaponry that serves no purpose other than to create more death. Don't tell me that you needed to protect yourself against the other person that has an AR-15. You know, stop with the arms race. It doesn't work. Does not work. All right, let's read it. I'll never get through all these if I comment on all of them.
Keep it moving.
Okay, so EMT Ann from Shirley Mastic. I always called it Mastic Shirley, but I guess Shirley Mastic works as well. This is a disgrace. We have children being murdered during school hours. We have people yelling, children scared and yelling, why? Why are we not doing anything? Or it's about time to do something about the gun control. Until we get real and stop playing the blame game on everything or anyone else. It's time to open your eyes and see what happens in your own home. The ones shooting are mentally incompetent in different ways. You know, that started off so good. Now I think it's delving into this right-wing rhetoric. They are looking for attention or angry at the world. They are screaming for attention. Guns do not kill. People kill. You know, guns don't have consciousness. Okay, I'll give you that. But they are the tools that kill. How are we even having that debate? Continuing, you cannot tell me that the shooter had no symptoms before he did what he did. Okay, you know what? Here's an exercise for every listener out there. Think of people that you think are a little bit off, you know, that you don't really trust, that you think might have, you know, a tendency to lose it one day. Someone you're not completely comfortable with. Have that person reported and get their weapons taken away. Because you've seen the symptom, right? You've seen the warning sign. You are concerned. And I guarantee you, every single time that happens, people like this, people who wrote this comment will be standing up saying, how dare you try to take away this person's weapons? If you had done that with any of the mass shooters that we're talking about right now, 1 week before, I guarantee you, those same people would have been demanding that he have his quote-unquote Second Amendment rights preserved. So this is utter nonsense. Yeah, sure there are symptoms. Sure there are warning signs. But don't pretend like you're going to do anything about them when they call to your attention. You won't. We all know that. Okay, continuing here. Parents need to be parents and stop looking the other way. The gun laws you are trying to impose will never work because no matter how much you try, they will get a gun if they really wanted to. Yeah, but you know what? The same thing can be said about anything that's illegal. You know, what's the point of putting a lock on a store? Because if somebody wanted to get in, they're just going to smash the window. You know, what's the point of making something illegal because someone's going to do it anyway? You know, maybe rape shouldn't be illegal. So, I mean, it's not going to stop it. So what's the point? I mean, how does society not break down with this kind of attitude? This goes on for a long, long time. There's other pieces I want to read. Maxton from North Fork, New York. Teach the children on the safe use of the defensive purpose of guns, not how the triggered psychopath abuses the gun. Have trained personnel in secure schools. Follow the God-given right to have open carry for personal protection from drug dealers and thugs raised in criminal environments. You realize the hell landscape that you are painting, where kids have to be able to fire guns, where schools are basically locked down prisons, where everybody is apprehensive and expecting to be attacked at any moment. That's the world you want to build. That's your solution.
More simplistic, reductionist, non-solutions.
It just it keeps going on and on and on and on. Never stops. And this sickness has been flourishing over the past few decades because we are not strong enough to stand up to it and fight it. Because if we did that, we'd win. We absolutely would win. Now there's a whole lot of weapons that are out there. And I say it's time that we get rid of them once and for all. And there are many ways we can do this without being antagonistic about it. First of all, you know, the people who have these weapons, I don't consider them to be the enemy. No, I consider them to be wrong. And I would like to be able to convince them that what they are doing is harmful to the rest of us and not helpful to them in any way. And I think, you know, anyone who comes forward and gives up these weapons should be compensated handsomely. I would not have a problem with everybody who has one of these weapons becoming wealthy if in exchange for giving up the weapons. You know, sort of like, you know, a Bitcoin thing. You bought something and it skyrocketed, and here's your opportunity to unload it before it crashes. I know, you know, what I'm saying is naive, probably never happened, but we have to start thinking this way. We have to start doing something constructive. Yeah, the Senate, okay, first step in 30 years, and I know you need to take a step to take the next step. But I'm seeing too many people being too satisfied with something that actually doesn't accomplish much. We need to do more. We need to be planning more. We need to be doing that immediately.
Yeah, don't let it be a falter.
Yeah. Sad. Really, really frustrating as well.
I'm really optimistic. I think that the right people are talking. They're talking about it with the right language. And there's imperative. Maybe not a rush. Certainly not a rush. There are people still pointing out how little and how long do we have to wait and for so little to be done. I mean, it's about time. It's gone too far. There's too much that has been lost.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really worried about what the Supreme Court might be doing in the days ahead with their gun interpretation, which could see New York being subjected to the same gun rules as other parts of the country, where people can basically just stroll around with weapons because they're allowed to do that back home. At that point, you have to start asking, what is the Supreme Court for? You know, it should not be a politically appointed body that simply gives the right wing a wish list of things that the people do not want. And at some point, you know, if this continues with, you know, anti-abortion rulings and anti-gun safety rulings and just not having a standing in reality, we have to start thinking, how do we fix this? You know, at some point, the Supreme Court is working against the people. Think about what you would expect in other countries. And get back to me on that, because this could be hell on earth if it continues the way it seems to be continuing. Maybe I'm a bit pessimistic there, but it sure seems like they're on the verge of doing some really, really ugly things that, you know, if the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, white people's votes counted twice as much as black people's votes. Yeah, it sounds ridiculous. We're not that far away from that right now. We're moving in that direction. We really are. They won't say things like that out loud.
Well,
but they, you know, in the back of their minds, and I listen to what people say, it's a wish list. And where we are now, 20 years ago, would have been unimaginable. So don't write it off. And ask yourself, what do you do with, you know, a branch of government that enables things like that? What do you do?
Well, and it wouldn't be hell on earth. It would look all pleasant, all have a nice sheen of fairness, mm-hmm. but be completely wrong, and appear as though we're something that we're truly not. You know, a society that is ruled and has. The kind of adjudication process that we deserve. It would be a hell in practice, but no one would talk about it, right? It would just be the way things are, and oh, don't be confrontational. Don't Don't criticize the majesty of this this pinnacle of justice, and you have to respect all of the sanctimony of the.
I'm done respecting. I'm done being quiet.
You know, but we have to respect the parliamentary system, the vestiges of British.
You know what? You're done. Yeah, that's what I can do. No, I'm serious. It's enough. You know, it's frustrating. It's something that I think we're all going to be facing in the weeks, months, years ahead. But we'll do it together. We will. And, I just can't believe bullets invented more than half a century after the Constitution, after the Second Amendment. Think about that. Think about that for a second. And here's something else. This really got me. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed a bill Monday allowing teachers to carry guns in class after only 24 hours of training. You know, in the past, school staff who wanted to be armed had to go through 700 hours of training. 700 hours. Now it's 24. I mean, teachers should not have guns to start with in any situation, unless they're teachers in a police academy. And even then, I don't see why. But this shows you how wacky things have gotten, where a governor can actually say, yeah, 700, let's make that 24, and have teachers walking around packing. No, it's wrong. It's insane. And at some point, you know, mass insanity has happened in the past with huge populations. We're going down that road. Unless we stop and say, wait, what are we doing? Come on, we're better than this. If we don't say that soon, we're not going to be better than this. All right, we're supposed to talk about gas prices this hour. That's what the subject of the show was. I'm sorry, we got sidetracked. Gas, that's something. It's expensive out there, isn't it?
Oh, energy, yes. But, you know, there's all kinds of forms and ways around that. You could ride a bicycle.
Yeah, no, there's all sorts of alternatives. But as far as the actual price, you know, we were out shopping yesterday for fuel, actually for diesel fuel.
There's a sort of stratification in the price.
Well, there's, it's weird because around here, what would you say, there's a place selling diesel for $6.59.
Yes.
So we decided to drive around a little bit and find something that was lower. And what did we get?
633 or 39.
630, yeah. So we, saved about 20 cents a gallon, add that up, and you could buy yourself a candy bar or something. It was okay. Today, though, we drove a little further, and we saw the same prices in the places that we passed by yesterday. But today, we saw a station selling it for $5.69. $6.59 to $5.69, within a few miles. And not only that, they were both the same brand of fuel. It wasn't like, one company competing with another company. No, it was the same company. So how is it possible that it's $6.59 at one station, and then a couple of miles down on the same road, it's $5.69? I mean, is that dyslexia? What's going on here? These prices are just, they seem to be just set willy-nilly by the oil companies and without any rhyme or reason. One thing, though, that seems pretty clear, people just blaming this on Biden, not really doing the research into how this works. I looked at a random set of countries. I looked at Canada, I looked at UK, I looked at France. In every single one of those countries, I ran out of time. I could look at more. Fuel prices for gasoline, for diesel, have increased about 20 to 24% since January. It's a significant number. But last I checked, Joe Biden doesn't rule the United Kingdom. He doesn't rule Canada. He doesn't rule France. So if you're going to blame him for rising fuel prices, well, then how do you explain those countries? Did he somehow mess up the world? And the same thing goes for inflation. People are angry about inflation. Hey, I'm angry about inflation too, but you know what? There's inflation everywhere. It's not just here. So, I'm sure there are things we can figure out to blame Joe Biden for, But that doesn't seem to be one of them. Give me the logic. Explain it to me. How is it his fault if it's happening to all these other countries? Obviously, the invasion of Ukraine played a big part. Because in Russia, the prices didn't go up. Because they have their own supply. Now, you could say, okay, well, why don't we simply start drilling or using fuel from the United States? Doesn't work that way. Look at any expert. They will tell you that. You know, they've already shut down a lot of these facilities. They did that years ago before Biden was even on the scene. If they wanted to start them up again, it would take many years to start them up again. Would not pay off. So that's not the solution. That's not why it's happening. Yeah, find something to blame. You know, I'm going to criticize Biden for going to Saudi Arabia. I'm going to criticize Biden for not inviting Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela to the America summit. I don't think we should have a right to disinvite countries to come to something in their own hemisphere. But this isn't it. This isn't what you blame him for. And, you know, people are putting stickers up on gas station pumps, you know, saying, you know, with the Biden sticker saying, I did that. That's nonsense. Republicans don't seem to be interested in solving issues. They seem to be interested in finding issues to get people upset about, but not doing a damn thing to fix them.
Yeah, and the oil sands, the qualities of crude versus light sweet crude and Texas Intermediate, like the things we refine, the things we import and process, it's complex, and it is not just again reductionist and simplistic. And I'm not gonna sit around and be lectured about stuff that I do understand.
Again. Just got to look at the facts. Okay, we're out of here. And yes, you know, people are constantly texting me. As we said at the beginning, our bandwidth is terrible. We know about it. There's nothing we can do about it. If you want a, and we sound kind of robotic. I know we're breaking up. If you want a good copy of this program, all you have to do is go to 2600.com/offthewall. It'll be up. It'll be up in a bit. It's going to take a while to upload because of our horrible connection. It should be fixed by next week, we hope. Again, our connection was 35 megabits a second up. Now it's 0.35. It's pathetic. What are you going to do?
Call the operator.
Yeah, call the operator. They'll have all the answers. I say hi to Mikey Dredd, and we'll be out of here. Finn is coming up next. He's going to sound great, though, compared to us. We'll see you next week, hopefully in a much better frame of mind. Good night.
Oh, yeah, light that up.
Hi.
Have you ever smoked a pound of weed by yourself? Have you ever smoked a pound of train wreck weed by yourself? Have you ever smoked a pound of bubblegum weed by yourself? Have you ever smoked a pound of purple haze by yourself? One more time I say, have you ever over here? Have you ever right here? Have you ever smoked a pound of weed? Have you ever smoked up on a pineapple kush? Have you ever smoked up on a kiki weed? Have you ever smoked up on a purple haze? Have you ever?
want to be a dynasty.